Now, today we are talking to the gorgeous Erica. Erica is based in the US, and like many of us, she had been suffering from the common symptoms of PCOS. So really irregular cycles, unexplained weight gain that did not fit with her lifestyle, or just inability to lose weight, also dry, brittle hair as well, and many other things that she identified later that no one had ever really connected for her. So I have a really bad habit of going way too much into detail in these intros and not leaving it up to them to tell their story. So I'm going to leave it at that, and we're going to get on now and have a chat to Erica and understand her entire story. Erica, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me here. It's so, so nice to have you here. Now, could you, as I get for all of our guests to do, take us back to what you think the start of your PCOS journey was?
Hello, Claire. I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this like all week. The start of my journey, looking back at it now, I would probably say started when I was like younger. I would say like 7, 8, maybe, if I had to give an age range. That was because like growing up, I was always like heavier. And when I notice it now, I was like, wow, I probably had some like insulin resistance, even like when I was just little. Like it was crazy to me realizing that. And then, cause I would always like eat, and then I would eat more and more. And I was like, yeah, maybe it's just cause like I'm younger, you know, I'm growing, but I don't think that was the case now. And then I would say, let's see, when I hit about 11 or 12, maybe, I think I had my first period. And it was, what I can recall, I think it was normal, but I don't remember. And then they progressively got worse. So they started off like normal, and then as I got older, it would become like a week period to 2 week periods, and then like I would have like a 3 week, and then like a 4. And I actually talked to my mom about it when I was I'd say 14, 15. I would be like, hey, like my periods are super long, like I don't understand. I don't know if it's normal. But, and she was like, well, not really. So I think that was when I saw my first doctor about it, and they didn't really do anything. They didn't give me, you know, like a checkup, because I was young. I wasn't sexually active. So there was no pap smear needed or anything. And the doctor that I saw, she was like, well, you might have PCOS, but you're too young to diagnose. And I was like, too young? I was like, you can't be too young to be diagnosed with something, right? Like, you're going to tell somebody who's ill if they're too young? No, you don't do that. So I kind of just had to mentally let it go. And then my mom brought up to me when I turned like 15 or 16, she made like a joke. It was like, hey, you have some peach fuzz on your lip. And I was like, what? You're kidding, right? And she was like, no, look. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Like, I'm growing a mustache. And I was like, okay, well, remember like the doctor that I saw said I could possibly have PCOS. They just wouldn't give me an official diagnosis. So I was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to start treating basically myself, because they wouldn't do it. So finally, and then it kind of made me feel really bad about myself growing up too. I don't know, looking back, it's just kind of like, I blamed myself for like everything, literally everything. I was like, I was such an active kid too. So it was confusing why I was still gaining weight, even though I did gymnastics. I took MMA, I did softball, and it was every year going up like a pant size. And I was like, what am I doing wrong? Like, what could I possibly do? What am I missing? And that kind of drove what I have been struggling with too for a while, is like the mental health part of PCOS, is the depression and the anxiety. And I feel like that's not, people don't see that side of it. So I kind of got, as I got older through high school, I got very reserved and I stopped like going outside. I stopped doing athletics. Like I quit doing all of that because it just kind of felt like, well, if a doctor can't help me, what can I do? I don't know anything about it. So when I hit 18, 17 or 18, it was my last year of high school. I still wasn't sexually active, but I pushed again for another doctor. I found another one and I was like, hey, can like help me? What, like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Here's my symptoms. Like, I've done so much research over this because I obsess over things when I feel like there's something wrong or not right with my body, I guess you could say. More like I had to figure out what was, like, just fix it. And so I found another one and they did like I said, I wasn't sexually active still. And they did a pap smear on me when I was 17, 18, which I thought was wild, but I guess if that helps diagnosis, and I still didn't get a diagnosis. They basically just checked my cholesterol. They checked, you know, I actually didn't get an ultrasound until this year, to confirm if I had cysts on my ovaries, but those don't really necessarily mean anything. So, but they checked, I think my hormone levels, and then they were pretty much like, oh, you just wait it out. I still didn't get an official diagnosis when I was 18. And then they sent me to an endocrinologist and he wanted to check my adrenal glands. But unfortunately, I couldn't get that done at the time because medical expenses in America when you don't have insurance are brutal. So I didn't have that luxury. And I was basically just stuck with, hey, here's a birth control pill. Maybe this will help you. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I don't really want to take that, but what other choice do I have? I don't have another one. If you're just going to push a pill on me, okay, I'll take it. So fast forward to 2019, 2020, I think. I was 22, 23. And I kind of just was like, okay, I'm old enough. You know, I stopped taking the birth control. I was really like down. Like I was really, really depressed because I'd had like month long periods, month and a half. I'd skip like 2 months, go back to having a month long. And I'm over here like exhausted.
Yeah.
Like I no matter how much I sleep, I wake up tired. And it's like, when you tell people that, they're like, oh, well, just go to bed earlier. And I'm like, what do you mean? I go to sleep. I have a decent sleep time. Even if I sleep 12 hours, I'm exhausted. And they're just like, well, just go to sleep. And I'm like, what do you want me to do? And so I found another gynecologist. This is my third doctor. And I really pushed him. And he was like, okay, I'll do an ultrasound on you. I saw that you got all of these. You fit the criteria back in 2014, but they didn't give you a diagnosis. And I was like, no. So like, can you just tell me, like, I just want to hear like what is happening to my body. And he was like, okay, well, here you go. Like, here's your ultrasound test. You have PCOS. And I was like, the relief to finally get what you're chasing after is amazing. Oh my God. I was so thrilled, even though it's not something to be happy about, but I was just like, finally I can start like actually making progress. Yeah. So
I have the answer. I have the beginning now. It's not necessarily the answer, right? Cause it's not like, well, what do I do about it? But at least it's like, okay, I know what's causing this now.
Exactly. And
I'm not going crazy.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly how I felt. I was like, oh my God, there's actually something wrong in my body. Like, this is great. So then I started the journey of trying to get myself out of this depression slump that I was in. Because at that point, a few years ago, like my hair loss was getting really bad. The facial hair wasn't going away. I didn't really struggle with acne too much. I mean, I have some, but it's not like cystic or it's not super bad to deal with. But the weight gain and everything, like, it just had to go. So I started seeing my actual, like, regular doctor, and I was explaining to her, like, hey, this is what my gyno diagnosed me with. Can you help me out? Like, I would really like to start therapy in order to help get my mental health right until before I start this journey, because I feel like that's super important before you start something that has to be a lifelong thing.
Such a good idea.
Yes. And so I was taking some depression meds for a while, which, no shame. If you need it, you need it. And then I started seeing a therapist at least once a week because I was, you know, I was not good. And then she was helping me with the whole mental works of it. Like, you have to, she's like, don't, like, overthink it, pretty much. Like, you have to start somewhere. And if you're going to do it now, because it's better than waiting later. So after I went to therapy for about, I would say, almost a year before I found the protocol when I hit 24. And I was like, you know, I was at first a little skeptical because I was like, you know, if my own doctor can't help me, there's no way this will, right? I was like, there's no way. So I was like, you know, this is kind of like my Hail Mary. I'll just give it a shot because I don't want to go on birth control, because actually when I did actually go on birth control, my gyno said that it was an only option, and that was this year. And he put me on Seasonique, which I guess is not good if you have high testosterone, which I was not aware of. So I feel like that kind of helped speed up my hair loss a little bit. But he put me on that, and I bled for 3 months straight. And every time I would bring it up to him, I was like, hey, I know it's been a month. I'm just checking back in. Like, I'm still bleeding. And he was like, oh, that's normal. Give it up to 3 months. And I was like, three. He's like, yeah, 3 to 6. And I was like, I'm supposed to be bleeding for 3 to 6 months. I was like, I'm going to be anemic by time I even get off of this pill. Like, and he was like, well, just wait. And I was like, okay. So I gave it a total of 3 months, and I was still heavily bleeding, like I was on my period. And I was like, it's exhausting. Like, you're so tired, like, on a pill that's supposed to help you. And he, this whole time that I was on it, I was pushing him to put me on Spiro, like, every single time I could get, like, a chance. When I messaged him about the pill, I was like, will you put me on Spiro yet? He was like, no, give the birth control a chance to work. And I was like, well, my hair's still falling out. So will you put me on Spiro? And he was like, no. And this last time I told him, I was like, you know, I found a new nutritionist and I had a period on my own. And I was like, it was normal. I don't know if I ovulated or not, but it was a regular 5-day bleed. And oh my God, I cried. That was the first normal period I've ever had in my entire life. And oh, it was the greatest feeling. It was the greatest feeling ever.
That's so great. And that's the thing, is that that while the pill can be really helpful for some people and it can be really helpful for some symptoms, it's not for everybody. And as you said, getting onto the right pill can be really hard for some people. So definitely, as you said, the Seasonique one is not one we'd really recommend for people with PCOS, because the progestin in it is actually quite androgenic. It's levonorgestrel, which can be quite androgenic, meaning that it can actually promote some more PCOS symptoms. And this is why it's really important to actually get onto, like, a more of an anti-androgen one if you want the support of that, like Diane-35. Which is more like, it helps with PCOS symptoms like hair loss and hirsutism and acne and things like that, but also why it's not the only thing. And it's not actually really going to, you should definitely not be bleeding for 3 months, right? I 100% disagree with that. Anyone that's going on the pill when you're getting massive bleeding, it's like, that's not an expected thing, and you shouldn't have to wait that out. It's probably a really clear sign that it's not the right one for you, but also it's not the only thing, you know? And as you've experienced, some people feel a lot better with not being on it, and especially for mental health reasons. A lot of people find mental health is significantly impacted by being on the pill. And so for them, yeah, it might not be the right thing for them.
Yes, and I really wish that I had my hormones tested before I was put on a hormonal birth control, but I kind of trusted him. So I was like, oh, you know, he probably knows maybe what he's talking about because he gave me a diagnosis. So let's do it. And there was like a warning on it too. Like, hey, if you have previously struggled with depression, this pill might make it worse. And I kind of didn't really heed that warning because you see that on a lot of medications that it could make it worse. And I was just kind of like, oh, it's fine. And nope. Sent me right back into a spiral. And I was like, oh, great. Okay, here we go again. Time to get back up and start over because it's not going to last forever. And it's really hard to like tell yourself that is that it's not, it starts now. Like you've started this and you're going to fall a few times, but just get back up because you're young and you're figuring it out now. And that's better now rather than waiting 10 years down the line when maybe you can't fix it. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right, is that so much of health is trial and error and figuring out what works for us. And that's why it's really good to come in with the expectation that things are not going to be linear, like perfect. It's not going to be some fairy tale. It's actually, or maybe it is kind of like, because often even in fairy tales, they have a, you know, there is a period of adversity. And that's what makes it so good is when you finally kind of get through the other side and be like, wow, like this is amazing. We, you know, have to go through that adversity. And sometimes that is trial and error and finding what doesn't work for us. And as you said, to have that knowledge at 24 is so powerful because going forward, you can be like, actually, I know that, you know, that doesn't work for me. And whenever a doctor suggests it to me, which they're naturally going to do because I have PCOS and this is a standard course of action, I can say, you know what, thank you very much for your, you know, your advice there, but that's not the right for me. I've tried it and it doesn't work for me. And I know what works for me now and it's fine. I'm happily managing my PCOS. And that, you know, that's as powerful as anything to have.
Exactly. Because you're educated and you've tried all of these things, even if you started young, it's still like a span of 10 years in the works. It's like, well, you know, this took me 10 years to learn, but now I'm here and now I can tell you to kindly not push that pill on me. Okay. Thanks.
Exactly. So after having, you know, that really, heavy, you know, like, so obviously you had bleeding for like 3 months, and before that you had, you know, quite heavy bleeding and fatigue with your periods before that. And now how do your periods feel now that you've kind of implemented your changes?
Now that I've had two consistently normal periods, amazing, by the way, like I just can't stress how happy I am about that. The difference in my energy levels is immaculate. I was like before I would just always be exhausted because it would start off heavy bleeding, but the first day of these are very light. And then the second day and third day are when, you know, I feel tired, but after that, it's like, I'm back to normal and I don't have to, this might be like a too much of a TMI, but when your bleeding is really heavy, you sometimes I would have to wear a tampon and a pad because I would otherwise be getting up to go to the bathroom to change my pad every like hour. And now this, it's like, I don't have to do that as often. And it's, oh my God, it's amazing. I don't know. It's just, it's the best feeling, honestly.
And it's just so freeing, right? Because, you know, you don't have to be thinking about it because subconsciously you're probably always thinking about, am I going to bleed through? Is this going to, you know, do I have to worry about, I have to wear black or something like that?
Yes.
And this is often the case in PCOS when we have a bit too much insulin or a bit too much estrogen, is that we can get a really thickened endometrial lining, and that's what can cause really heavy bleeding. And so what you said before about a 5-day normal period, I think that's a really good thing to just for people to realize what a normal period should look like, and that it should kind of come with not a lot of fanfare. You might have a couple of days of heavy-ish, medium to heavy bleeding, but you shouldn't be really going through more than like a tampon every 2 hours, or more likely every 4 hours. I did do an episode with Dr. Lara Bryden about what a normal period should look like, which we'll link into the podcast show notes. But knowing what it should look like and then going, okay, something's going wrong here, and then you can go and find the answers. Whereas if you don't know that that's something that's wrong because you've always had really heavy bleeding, then how do you know to go and find a solution for yourself, right?
Exactly. And I was not, when the doctors wouldn't give me that diagnosis and they said like, oh, you're too young to have this, in my head I was like, okay, well, maybe if I wait, then, you know, that maybe this is normal, maybe all of this bleeding is just normal. And it kind of like, the more I got told, no, there's nothing wrong with you, there's no diagnosis to be done, the more they told that to me, the more in my head I was like, okay, well, maybe this is normal, like bleeding for a month is normal, and maybe other girls have it too, or, you know, growing facial hair, maybe that's normal. And coming to find out that it's not, it was like, I was like, oh, well, I don't know how to feel about that, because that's, I don't know, because it's just very devastating, I guess you could say, because it's like, so you're telling me I'm not normal? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, totally. And it's that, I think you're right. I think if they can't do the diagnosis, and the reason that a lot of them don't want to do the diagnosis so young is because it is quite normal for teenagers to have irregular cycles, right? But a regular cycle might be that you get, you know, a period every 60 days instead of every 28 days. But like bleeding for months and months at a time is like just not a nice thing, especially for anybody, let alone a teenager who's learning to work out her body and stuff. And so maybe explaining it to you in a way that it's like, okay, yeah, this is not what we'd, you know, not what we'd expect, but here's something we can maybe do for you to help with the symptom in the meantime. And we'll wait and see what happens with your cycles over the next few years and see whether this is actually, you know, caused by something else, or whether it's just a normal part of you going through puberty and these being quite irregular at the moment. So having that context would have been really helpful, right?
Exactly. It would have been so much better, like offering me an option instead of giving me this false hope that it's like, oh, well, it could get better. Like it can change. So when you're all up in your head about that, you're like, oh, well, this is just temporary. This is not something I have to fix right now. I can wait. And the longer you wait, the worse it gets. Yeah.
And so you said before, you mentioned to us that you think that you've had some insulin resistance for a while. And obviously this is something that we identified for you in the protocol, right? That what was really driving this for you was that your blood glucose and insulin was too high. And that's why you were getting these really heavy periods. That's why you were getting this weight gain that didn't match your athletic, you know, lifestyle as a kid. Why you could be playing all these sports and stuff and still you're gaining weight and doesn't make any sense. While you're hungry all the time, while especially you were putting on that weight around your midsection more than anything.
Yes. And when I was like 8, I would say I had a babysitter, and before I went to my babysitter's, I would eat breakfast. And then at my babysitter's, I would have more breakfast, but it's because like I was still hungry, and then it just never felt satisfying to eat something and just feel full. Like if I did, I kind of felt a little guilty because I was like, oh, you know, I ate so much today, and like, why do I still feel hungry? It's like, what? And I think that's what I also deal with, an eating disorder. I know a lot of people tend to deal with that.
Absolutely. I think it's the stats in PCOS is 40% of people with PCOS have disordered eating.
Yes. And I always thought that was my fault too, because the more weight I gained from the insulin resistance, the more I would not eat during the day. And come to find out, apparently that's more harm to my body than it does good. So I wouldn't eat breakfast. I would skip lunch. I wouldn't eat until like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then it felt like it was a binge like that whole afternoon. And it was like, you know, I haven't eaten all day. And then I would feel bad about myself. And I'm like, well, I messed it up, so I have to start all over again. And then it was like always telling yourself, like, you'll start tomorrow, but tomorrow never comes until you make it come.
Yeah, absolutely. And also too, is that we're not really in control of this. It's not just a willpower thing. We think it's a willpower thing. We think, well, I'm just not strong enough to not binge, you know, like I've been so good all day and then I just like, it's my fault. I lose my self-control, but it's a physiological response. It's like your blood sugar is so low. Your body is driving you to go and find food. And especially like high sugar food is the best thing for getting our blood sugar back up. And so I think that while disordered eating has a massive psychological component, it also has a massive physiological component as well. And we spoke very early on in the podcast series, I think it might have been almost podcast 4, we'll put a link into this, with another woman who had also suffered from binge eating disorder. And what was really important for her was getting a combination of therapy, but also to food that was working for her body. So she wasn't constantly hungry all the time. She actually did feel satiated. And then she didn't feel that need to go and seek out food because she was actually full and satiated for the first time in her life.
Mm-hmm. I know it's crazy. When I started before I actually found your protocol, I was looking around for a nutritionist, but I knew that I couldn't treat my body like other people do, you know, like I knew that I couldn't have like, not that I can't have certain things, but that I probably shouldn't. And I went through multiple nutritionists who were like, oh, maybe you should eat all of this high carb fruit. And I was like, that's probably a bad idea. I love fruit, but they're just like pushing it on me a little bit. And they're like, just, you know, eat all of this fruit. And I was like, okay. So when I was doing my weight loss journey, I did start eating fruit, but I incorporated the high protein breakfast very early on. So that stage was pretty easy. And then that's when I incorporated more protein is when I felt more full before I found the supplements and stuff. That was satisfying me. And I was like, oh my God, who knew?
Yeah, totally. And this is where I think that a lot of general nutritionists get it wrong. And I can understand why, because this is literally what we get taught at university is, okay, if someone's struggling with weight loss, we give them low calorie foods that are full of like water and fiber and things like fruit. That's what fruit is. It's full of water and fruit can be great, but unless we actually understand what's happening inside their body, which for you was this insulin resistance, is that then we could actually be exacerbating that. And if you give someone with insulin resistance a lot of fruit and on its own, their blood glucose is going to spike and then it's going to come crashing down. And then they're going to be hungry literally 2 hours later. And then they're going to be really hungry or as you describe it, not feeling full at all. Whereas if we actually look at that patient and go, okay, you're struggling with weight, but why are you struggling with weight? It's not because we can see from your history as a kid, you were really active. You were eating what other kids were eating and why was your body reacting a different way? And then we can say, okay, your labs show that your insulin's not as optimal as possible. So you've got some insulin resistance. So therefore we need to treat that insulin resistance. And that's what's then going to improve the weight loss. And so for you, we didn't do anything with calories, right? We didn't even speak one sentence about calories with you. And yours, I think when I spoke to you last, you'd lost already like 20 pounds.
Yes. Before I found the protocol, I lost 30 and I plateaued and I didn't understand why. And then when I started the protocol, I lost 20 more. So overall it's been 50.
Wow.
And I know it, but most of it, when I did do the protocol, it came off of my waist, which is honestly the only part that I don't like where the fat is stored at. That's my biggest thing, is I just want it to go off my waist. I don't care what I weigh, as long as it goes away, it's fine. But,
And the reason for that is because that's where our insulin stores, if our insulin's high, right? That's where it's going to store, is around our abdomen, around our waist. And so if we actually improve our insulin by tweaking what we're eating, and as you said, supplements, like we're making sure we're getting enough vitamins and minerals, and we're actually giving you good sleep finally for the first time in your life, where you're feeling refreshed when you wake up, that's when insulin's going to improve. And that's where the weight is going to happen. And so for you, I think that's definitely been the case.
Yes, 100%. I didn't, I don't think we ever did, like you said, talk about calorie counting. I think it was just, I was already doing that because I was already in a deficit, but I was also applying everything else with that deficit.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the really important thing. Sorry, I'm actually just closing the window. This window is banging here. I can hear it in the background. I'm just going to quickly close that. So we'll start. Sorry, we'll go back and I'll quickly cut this out when I edit it. The wind, it's such a beautiful morning here, and then the wind's just picked up. I just want to make sure that there's nothing worse than back to a podcast and it being like, oh my God, I can hear the noise in the background. Okay, cool. So we're just going to just remember to cut that bit out. Yes, and that's a really important thing when it comes to weight loss, is that we've got to have both of these working together. So calories definitely play a role, right? We have to, our body has, there has to be a reason for us to, for our body to go and access our body fat and burn that for energy. Otherwise, it'll just use the food that we're eating, right? We are lazy. We're inherently lazy. We want to do what's least energy intensive, and using the food that we're eating for energy is definitely the best way we can, or the most efficient way for our body to get energy. Actually having to burn fat is quite hard. It doesn't really want to do that.
Yes.
So that's why, you know, we have to be eating less than what we're expending to, in order to lose weight. But for that to happen, our body actually has to be, our insulin has to be low enough for it to allow that to happen. And especially to burn that stuff around our abdomen, it's absolutely, we have to have low enough insulin. And I think that's why, as you said, you'd already kind of got the calorie part right, which was great, but the now adding the insulin part right in there was the really important thing to get that, lose the weight around the abdomen, and also to continue to lose weight, as opposed to just kind of plateauing and not really being able to go any further.
Yeah, because I couldn't understand, like, even when I was still decreasing my calories and I was going to the gym, I would go at least 3 to 4 times a week. And it was never really, sometimes it was in the morning, but sometimes it was in the afternoon. And to find out that I'm accidentally stressing myself out at the gym because I have adrenal problems too, and then getting Starbucks after I worked out at the gym, that was probably not helping my weight loss at all, because I wasn't getting good sleep because of it, and then it just kind of went down. But when I was trying to lose weight though, I had more, my doctor one time put me on phentermine, which is okay, but coming off of it was not great.
Yeah. Do you know what phentermine is? Because I think that a lot of people wouldn't know what that is.
She explained to me that it was a stimulant, like an appetite suppressant, but that's the all I really know about it.
Yeah. And one of the ways that it works is by actually, it speeds up your metabolism a little bit as well. And so it's like being on speed, the drug. Well, you know, like, and yeah, it does work as an appetite, you know, suppressant in that way as well. Which can be, you know, like, it can be helpful for some people if they, you know, that's what they need is, but a lot of people with PCOS actually find that they don't eat a lot, and so just suppressing the appetite is not really fixing the issue, because they're like, well, I already don't really eat that much. It's not that I'm overeating, it's the fact that my insulin's too high, and phentermine unfortunately doesn't really do anything to help our insulin. So in that way, I think that it, you know, could be really helpful for some people, but on the whole, for people with PCOS, it doesn't seem to be very effective.
Yeah, and I was not aware of that until I came off of it. Then I was like, well, this is terrible. But probably the most successful medication that I have taken that has helped me lose weight and keep it off is Ozempic, even though it is a shot. But it works with your insulin too, which it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's Ozempic is, it actually is working on the root cause, because it is helping our insulin, and it is probably being more in what I'm seeing with people with PCOS is that what they'll often give you is metformin, but metformin doesn't work. Did they ever give you that to you, Erica?
I don't think I was ever on metformin, no.
Mm. So some people, they might start with that first, but it's not very successful for a lot of people. And whereas Ozempic is kind of the next stage of insulin drugs now, and that is that you do inject it. So as you said, it's a little bit more invasive than just taking a pill like metformin, but in terms of the effectiveness of it can be a lot more effective. So there's some really interesting new insulin drugs coming out on the market, and especially they're available to you guys in the US. I'm not seeing them as available in other parts of the world, but could be really helpful in helping with that weight loss, as opposed to, as you said, the phentermine. I just don't see that it doesn't really line up with the problem of why the weight loss is happening. And as you said, the coming off of it, what were the side effects that you experienced coming off it?
Oh my God. It was like I was an addict, literally. I was not happy. Because it's only a 3-month thing and you have to get your blood pressure checked while you're on it. And so when you go and then your doctor's like, well, you know, you're on it for 3 months, can't give you any more. And I was like, not even like one bottle, not even one more week, like nothing. And it was like then that I realized like I became so dependent on this drug to help me suppress the cravings that I had. And it pretty much just caused me to spiral back into my depression, and I was back to being super anxious all the time and fatigued. And I was like, well, it was good while it lasted, but it doesn't last.
Absolutely. And again, you were not fixing that problem. It's a bit of a band-aid, and maybe for some people it works as a good band-aid for a while, but we'd have to, you know, like if at least if we could work on the root cause at the same time, that would be a better outcome, right?
But exactly,
just going on it without knowing why you're hungry all the time, if that is the case, if you are hungry all the time and it is helping to suppress, or why you're craving sugar, is if then we can work on, okay, let's improve your insulin while you're on it, so when you do come off it, you're not going to be craving these things as much, then that would be a far better alternative than just being told, oh, here, you're struggling with weight loss, go on phentermine, and then, you know, see you in 3 months when you can't take it any longer, and then you're back to
where you started.
Yeah, exactly. And because the thing is that it's not teaching us anything about our body and how to actually implement things, and also the habits that we need to sustain this for long-term health, right? Because there's no point, as you said, even if you do lose a bunch of weight on phentermine, the fact that you can't take it for more than 3 months, it's like, well, what's going to happen when I come off it? And the same thing as doing any kind of like weight loss or diet for a short period of time, is that unless we actually implement really good habits about how to maintain this, we're just going back to where we started in 2 months' time, as opposed to, you know, in a year's time, we're even further ahead. And I know that's something that you've worked really hard on, and your progress hasn't been straightforward. You've had some setbacks, but the main thing is that you've created really good habits to be able to come back to what you know works really well for you, instead of just going, oh, I can't do this, and I'm not going to be able to keep up with this, and so therefore I'm going to give up and then go back to the way that I was.
Yes, that was a journey to learn by itself, honestly. Like just remembering that, like, hey, you can have you'll mess up for a straight week, but just get back on track. Even if, you know, it's going to be hard when you start, but just having the mental state of like, it's okay, you know, you didn't really mess up, you just had a slip, you lost your footing, now just regain it. It's not, you know, it's fine, it's really fine. Like, don't punish yourself for it. I used to do that a lot, so really learning that has helped me every time I've maybe slipped and fell and like kind of went back into the old habits. Just when you realize it, you're like, oh my God, well, here we go, like, just let's get started now, and then it'll be okay.
Totally. And I remember there was one really clear example I remember from you talking about was your Starbucks bacon sandwiches.
Yes, I am a Starbucks fiend, even though I haven't broken the coffee one yet, because I really enjoy that I can sleep 8 hours without waking up in the middle of the night. But the bacon and Gouda sandwich is my weakness, even though it's high in carbs. It's so good.
And I remember you saying actually one of my, because I always ask you guys what your wins are this week, and especially mm-hmm. around the habits that you formed. And you were like, actually, it might not sound like a win, but it really was a win. It was the fact that I had been into a habit this week for about a week of having a bacon Gouda sandwich. Mm-hmm. But then realizing that I didn't have to wait to Monday to kind of get out of that habit. I could actually just focus on my next meal. And that when I did, I then suddenly found that actually I can break this chain and I can get back on track without having to wait until tomorrow or next week or next month or having some sort of like set period in the future. It was just like, actually,
yes.
I had the bacon sandwich. Not a big deal. Yeah. What am I going to have for lunch?
Exactly. Pretty much that's just what it was, is, hey, you slipped on breakfast, but not a big deal. Okay. It doesn't mean you have to mess up your whole day. It's just one time, even if it's once every day. I feel like that realizing it and then fixing it after that one time, even if it happens every day, is still really good progress.
Absolutely. And for you, this has been a massive thing for you to get your head around, is that being this, that you can be 80-20, right? Because you've come from mm-hmm. past where it's been like all or nothing.
Yes, exactly. Like I would make myself like cut out everything like bad for you. Like I wouldn't have a soda. I would try not to eat chocolate, like just literally everything. And then I would eat salad all the time. And because I always thought that's what you're supposed to do. Like, hey, diet means salad. This is what I have to eat all the time.
And then now realizing that it's not like that. You can still get what you want, but actually by having, you know, maybe two or three meals a week where you're having, as you said, even if it was a meal a day, it's still like 60% improvement on where you were last week.
Exactly. And it's like, it's better than no progress, or 50%, and then just like working up from that 60 all the way to where you want to be is still like, that's amazing.
Absolutely. Focusing on those little wins, and if we recognize those little small wins, we're more likely to continue in what we call in the protocol compound those habits. So you're more likely to go, oh, cool, great, I did really well, I had two meals today which were really good, now I'm going to get to bed, you know, by 9:30 tonight so I can get a good night's sleep, and I might get up tomorrow and go for a walk, right? And if we do that, we're more likely to achieve those more habits we want to implement, as opposed to berating ourselves and go, oh, you stuffed up on breakfast again, you're useless. Mm-hmm. You know, and then we're going to feel bad about ourselves, and we're probably more likely to sit on the couch with a bag of chips after dinner and have that, and then watch, you know, a whole series on Netflix and get to bed at 1 a.m. And, you know, like, and then that compounds the kind of the bad things we don't want to happen.
Yes, I agree.
So for you, like, what are the other habits that you found that are really important for you to implement that have been a big change for you?
I would say... since I was already going to the gym, I changed it to walking instead of strength training, which I did for a long time. Like I'm talking like years. That's what I focused on, because every fitness influencer you see or advice is like, strength train, here you go. And I'm like, well, apparently that's not good for me. So it's very misinterpreting when you see that. And then switching to walking actually helped me lose more weight than strength training did, which is wild. And then I used to have kind of a bad sleep schedule. Like, even though I would sleep like super late and get up really early, like still exhausted, but even when I went to bed super early and then also woke up super late, still exhausted, but getting into a routine on the supplements and getting a full at least 7.5 to 8 hours is a game changer for my energy. It's crazy. I can wake up and not be super grumpy and just be like, well, I really don't want to get out of bed, and have that internal battle in the morning where like I don't really want to get up. Like, can I just call into work? Like, I don't want to do anything. But changing those sleep habits helped me be like more energetic in the morning. So where I can just get out of bed, like right straight away and just start my morning. Like, those help tremendously.
And that's amazing. I think that a lot of people listening will be like, I want what she's having. Give me that. I don't remember the last time that I woke up and was like, oh yeah, I'm ready to get out of bed. It was all, you know, it's always been like,
yes. And I honestly, I think I'm starting to become a morning person. I've never thought I would have said that about myself because I don't like getting up. So it's like when you wake up super happy, I'm like, wow, this is great. This is going to be a great day.
Yeah, it's so, and small things like that just make such a difference in your quality of life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we've talked about the, you know, for you, some of the big wins were losing, you know, 20 pounds or actually 50 pounds total, which is incredible. And you know, just for, given how hard it can be, and I know how hard it was for you as a, you know, young person, that's, you know, that's a really, a really amazing result for you. But also things like, you know, especially losing it around your waist, which is where we knew that insulin resistance was playing a part. Mm-hmm. And going from having really horrible heavy bleeding and extreme fatigue around your period to now having a very normal 5-day period that kind of comes without a lot of fanfare and doesn't impact your life too much. I mean, those are really, really incredibly big wins, but also all of the other little wins around that, like not being hungry all the time, waking up feeling refreshed in the morning instead of feeling super fatigued. Those are all the things that really help improve our quality of life almost more in some regards, right?
Yes. And you don't realize it, that it's not, that it's a problem until you start to work on that and fix it. Like, waking up tired, even when you get so much sleep, I always thought everybody felt like that. Like, I was like, well, I guess it's just, I'm not a morning person. Like, maybe that's the problem. And it's like, nope, you're just really stressed out.
Yeah, absolutely. And also you always think, oh, maybe this is just what it feels like to be an adult, you know, that you just constantly.
Yes. Exactly.
That's not the case. And were there anything else that you've noticed, like little changes like that have been quite surprising to you that you thought were just normal?
One big thing was my social anxiety. I've always had that, always had social anxiety. It's always been a struggle for me to attempt to talk to somebody or go out. But when I started taking the supplements and implementing most of the changes that, you know, sustain a longer and, you know, healthier life, is when I started noticing that I felt more comfortable going out somewhere by myself. And that was kind of shocking to me because at first I didn't know that, I guess PCOS can like feed into your anxiety or fuel it apparently. And I always thought it was normal for other people to go out and be like super, like freaking out, have a really fast heart rate for no reason. Like, I just walked out in public and I'm already like losing my mind. I didn't understand it, but that has actually gone away now. Or it's gotten like 100% better. Even if there's still a little, you know, sometimes I'll still have like a minor anxiety attack, but it's not like the chest tightening ones.
Yeah. And I think that's a really kind of like what we were saying before about the disordered eating, is that part of mental health is very is psychological, and that's why, you know, therapy and talking helps. But a lot of it is also very physiological, and actually that systems in our body really contribute to our mental health, and systems in our body like our stress response, our insulin, chronic inflammation, we all know that they play a role in mental health. And so that's why when we actually give our body what it needs to work optimally, sometimes we find that that can be really helpful. And not always the case, but most of the time it's that, again, that combination approach of the therapy or potentially also pharmaceutical medication to help, but also making sure that our body is working as optimally as possible so that it can work our brain can work optimally as well.
Yes, exactly. And I wish I would have known that most of the mental health problems were because of what everything was going on inside your body. Like, it's inadvertently stressed out for, even if you don't do anything, you're just, even your stress highs are so high, can be caused just by a coffee. Like, I was a big coffee drinker. I used to drink it every morning, Starbucks fiend, like every morning, a venti coffee. And no, not anymore.
Yeah. And that's when we realized, because when we realized for you that it was your insulin and your stress hormones that were really playing a role in a lot of your symptoms, that's when we then identified that coffee probably was, it was either we reduced the amount, because a venti also has a huge amount of caffeine. I think I have a social media post on this, and I can't remember what the actual figure is, but I think it's somewhere around 400 milligrams of caffeine, compared to, like, for example, a black tea has 40, venti 400, and a normal kind of double shot espresso has about 185, 200 milligrams of caffeine. So a venti, you're getting like kind of double, like a four shot in there. And that's why, you know, for someone, especially if your body genetically just doesn't deal with caffeine very well, that can have an incredible effect on how you feel. And especially because for some people, and I have this genetic variation, caffeine doesn't make me feel focused. It makes me feel anxious if I have quite a lot. And I think you're probably the same, Erica.
Yes. And not realizing that it was fueling into that, you don't know. Like, no one ever told me that coffee was supposed to wake you up. It was supposed to be like, start your day right, drink some caffeine. Like, okay. Yeah. And then I'm like freaking out at work over nothing, just nothing, sitting there just sweating. I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong with me?
Yeah. And that's why when we realize, you know, when we actually delve deep and go, because caffeine can be absolutely fine for some people, especially, you know, one cup first thing in the morning. But unless you go, okay, your stress hormones really aren't functioning here, these symptoms don't sound right, why don't we try and either decrease your caffeine or go decaf for a couple of months and see if a lot of these symptoms improve, then only then will you know. Otherwise, it's very hard to actually get that information. But
yes.
But I would definitely say to all the people listening here is that I'm not saying that everyone needs to completely give up caffeine. It's, for many of you, what you're having at the moment is probably fine, but it all depends on you and your root cause, and also a bit about what's going on in your life as well. Because if we have a really stressful life, then maybe even if your body can cope with breaking down caffeine, we're just adding more stress in there, because caffeine is a stimulant. It's going to stimulate our stress hormone response. And so maybe that's something that if we can't remove other parts of stress in our life, maybe caffeine is one of the easiest things we can. And the same thing with you, with your exercise, is that actually choosing a lower intensity exercise was actually more effective for you, because that was what worked for your body, because you had a lot of other sources of stress in your life. And that was one thing we could change and easily adapt.
Yeah. And when I did cut out coffee, I can say my sleep, I couldn't figure out why my sleep was, like, I used to sleep really good when I was younger. And then a few years ago, I would sleep, but I would wake up at like 2:30 to like 4 a.m. in the morning. And I would just be like, why am I awake? Like, I am wide awake. I'm not tired now. Like, struggle getting back to sleep, struggle falling to sleep. But when I cut it out completely, I slept 8 hours, even if it took like a few weeks for my body to adjust to it. And then I started noticing the improvements. It was like, I don't think I'm ever going to go back to coffee in general. Like, I just don't think I can.
Yeah. And that's that. Is it worth it? Right. That's sometimes.
Oh
and
my
sometimes,
God. Yes.
You know, like, sometimes you have a day where you're like, yeah, it is worth it today. And that's okay. But it doesn't have to become then a daily thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And again, that's where the 80-20 comes in. So for people listening here, because obviously they're sitting here thinking, wow, like, your story is amazing. And as we've talked about, though, it hasn't been completely linear. It's not like you know, there are times where you, you know, feel like you're more in control of those habits, and other times when you feel less in control and have to work back to kind of get back to it. But the main thing is that you've been able to maintain this now for months and months, which is more than most people are able to maintain those habits, which I just think is an incredible, incredible result. For you, if you could give yourself, so think back to your 23-year-old self, if you could give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
Probably to start this journey now. Like, I wish I started it sooner, honestly, instead of constantly putting it off. I wish I could go back and be like, if you start it now, the longer you continue all of these good things, the better off you will be when you get older. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's the, and especially given that this is, you know, like the new year and people are trying to make changes and things like that, is that what would we rather do? Would we rather actually make the changes that are right for our body now, and then, you know, in a year's time, be looking back and be like, wow, I've made so much improvement, or be worried about making the wrong change, or, you know, or not get started and then be in the same position we were in a year's, exactly in a year's time.
Yes. And when you see those changes, finally, even if you've been at it for months, but you finally see a little progress, it's more incentive for you to keep going, because it's only going to get better. Of course, you're going to struggle, but it's literally just going to get better. And that's, you just got to like remind yourself of that pretty often is what I have to do, but it's worth it.
Yeah, so worth it. Oh, well, thank you so much for your words of wisdom, Erica, and sharing your story. It's we're really grateful that you have, you know, have shared with us, so that other people in your position can just see some light for themselves and know that there is things that they can do, especially around really getting to understand the root cause, and that that makes such a massive difference in terms of what changes are going to have the most effect and what won't. And then it, you know, takes a lot of the guesswork out of it, right? That we're now doing the things that are going to make the big difference, as opposed to just trying and going, okay, well, maybe I go vegan this year, or maybe I like go keto, or, you know, doing all those things that we're really hoping to get the outcome we want, but we're not necessarily, we don't know why or how to get the outcome that we want.
Yes. And thank you so much for having me. It was a blast. And I really hope that even if they take one thing that I said, that it will help. And that's really all that I want.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.